Daniel Jones is 2-0 as a starter, and I'm going to tell all New York Giants fans to pump your brakes before you get yourself too excited. Let's see what he does against two big-time teams coming up in the next 2 weeks. Then we'll see if Daniel Jones is the real deal or not. And everybody, not everybody, but most people, even the media, is jumping on this Brooklyn Nets bandwagon. Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants or Jets, Yankees or Mets, Knicks or Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
A-O-B! And please pardon my fresh as we bring you all new episode of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, September 30th, the last day in September, and this show airs every Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Google Play, Pocket Cast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. You can also catch previous tapings of the show to catch up on some things you may have missed. Me and Mad Mike are also on social media, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter, LLOYD. Be sure to hit that follow button. And as always, if you got any questions that you'd like for me and Mad Mike to answer, you can always shoot them through email to lloyd@partmyfresh.com, or you can send them directly to the website. Another great show for you listeners, as we always bring to you. We're going to talk New York Giants football, as the Giants have a two-game winning streak. Is Daniel Jones the real deal, or should you just slow your roll for another 2 weeks to see if he's actually the real deal? Pete Alonso broke Aaron Judge's rookie home run record. Should we be patting him on the back, or is the juice ball the reason why he actually broke the record? We're going to talk some basketball as media day is starting for NBA teams, and everybody is jumping on the Brooklyn Nets bandwagon, including the media, listeners. And we're also going to talk some baseball as the Yankees are preparing for a run for their 28th World Title Series, starting this Friday against the Minnesota Twins. Do they have what it got to win their 20th title? So as always, listeners, let's buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Ayo! Let's get it!
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Monday. That means it's time to talk sports with Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike. Let's go.
As always, we gotta find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
Lloyd, today we are in New York. We are strictly ready to party. Trying to bring that chaotic feel to Yankee Stadium as the Yankees getting ready to kick off this week. Yankee Stadium, can't wait for it to start on Friday, man. You know we don't leave New York during playoffs. So
we're going to touch up on some baseball later in the show, because we got to talk about Pete Alonso eclipsing Aaron Judge's rookie home run record, which I've never wanted someone not to earn a record as much as I didn't want him to earn it, but I had a feeling it was going to be fate, Mad Mike. But we'll touch up on that in the second half of the show. But let's talk football, as the New York Football Giants are 2-2, and Giants mediocrity has never been so much, in my opinion, Mad Mike. And the best case scenario from the start was to be 2-2, a quarter way into the season. All right, 2-2 isn't a record around which poems are read or poems are created, in my opinion, Mad Mike. 2-2 is it the ambitious record? Who likes to be at 500? Win one, lose one. Win one, lose one. Who likes that? No crowd has ever chanted 2-2 to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge. All right. But sometimes, though, It is the pathway to a record that tells a greater story than the record itself, Mad Mike. A week ago, the Giants stood helpless as a place kicker for Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Matt Gay, lined up for a 34-yard field goal. Think about this, listeners and Mad Mike. In 2018, NFL kickers attempted 501 field goals of 39 yards and shorter, and they made 481 of them. I did my homework. Me and Mad Mike do our homework, so we're not just spitting hot caca out of our mouths. That is a 96% clip. So the Giants had a 96% chance a week ago to fall 0-3, Mad Mike, on the season. Now, the good thing about pro sports is there's always someone who's a little worse off than you. And even if the Giants has staggered in the MetLife Stadium Sunday at 0-3, they would have been greeted by the wondrous sight of the Washington Redskins, who I thought was better than the New York Giants. And they might be the second worst team in the NFL behind the Miami Dolphins, Mad Mike. And they're shaping up to be one of the great football calamities this side of the world. Oh my gosh, this team is bad, Mad Mike.
The issue in Washington is not just the roster. The issue in Washington is who they're allowing to build that roster and who they're allowing to coach that roster. Now, we don't know this. We're not in New York, so we don't know this to be true or false. But we do know that with the way that Jay Gruden handled the Adrian Peterson situation early on, but right before the season started, benching him, making him inactive, there was a lot of rumors that he lost the locker room. Jay Gruden has been a guy who has rubbed players the wrong way his entire tenure there. And I think what you're seeing right now is maybe not the worst roster. You're looking at one of the worst rosters, but you're also looking at a team that, you know, has an overrated coach. What has Jay Gruden done outside of winning the division 1 year? And that year they won the division, they didn't beat one 500 team with a 500 record. So he's probably one of the most overrated coaches in football. I like to believe Pat Shurmur is one of those overrated coaches in football. And I think while I do think the Giants have a better situation at quarterback, if when we're talking about today's NFL, let's also consider Case Keenum, who was playing for Washington Redskins today or yesterday. That was the guy that Pat Shurmur was hanging his hat on. You saw how bad he looked. So I don't know, man. Washington is horrible, but the Giants timed this perfectly, dude. They timed it perfectly.
This team is so bad, man, Mike, that the Giants look terrific in pounding them out. 24-3 was the final score. And even if they've been coming in limping off a loss, you know, the perfect storm of a terrible Redskins roster, like you just mentioned, awful injuries. This team is battered with a bunch of injuries, Mad Mike. And a hideous quarterback play wouldn't have made a difference. Funny thing, though, is that the game missed, you know, he missed the kick. The Giants won a game, and they now are on to honest to goodness winning streak. 2 in a row. They're 2-2 after 4 games. If nobody is going to call ahead and reserve space among the Grand Canyon of heroes for them after reaching the epitome of mediocrity after 4 games, this has a feel-good shine to it. The whole day it did. I'm talking about the game, not the Giants, because I still think this is a bad football team. And now they better put on their big boy pants, Mad Mike, because they got some games the next 2 weeks. They better put on their big boy pants. They better put them on. And you could point out that as one side as the score was and the performance disparity between the teams was given greater than that. The Giants didn't play an especially crisp game, in my opinion, Mad Mike, Sunday. They turned the ball over 4 times. All right, not looking near as efficient offensively as they did last week. All right, so again, if they was playing a better football team, Matt Mike, would they have won this game? This is why I say the next 2 weeks is crucial for this team, and the next 2 weeks is what I'm going to do when I make my final verdict on Daniel Jones and his you know, I already made my verdict on the team, but Daniel Jones, these next 2 weeks, and then I'll tell you if the Giants got something, if they got a decent quarterback in the future, if we have something to be excited about.
Well, like I said, when it comes to the quarterback, I think that what they've done is they've kind of pulled the wool over our eyes. Yes, he's looked good, but we're talking about a kid that they purposely only let play against backups in the preseason. So he looked really good, and as we discussed, he wasn't playing with Giant backups. He was playing with Giant starters against other teams' backups. So you could say, tell me he was building the chemistry, and I say that that's, you know, BS. They were just trying to put out better talent against just guys second and third stringers, and they did it again. Last week I think Tampa Bay in the first quarter is what you're going to see when they play better teams. I think you're going to see it more often. You know what I mean? It is what it is. Tampa Bay took their foot off the gas, and we can make that argument after they blew the doors off the Rams yesterday. They didn't take their foot off the gas, and they pushed up 55 points on them. So, you know, I don't know, man. When I look at it, we'll see. Like you said, I'm a wait and give it a few more weeks, but they timed it perfectly. You know what I mean? They did what they had to do.
This just goes to show how bad the Washington Redskins offense is, Matt Mike. They made the Giants defense, which looked vulnerable the first 3 weeks. I mean, you wondered if they'd eventually have to ask for a waiver to use 13 guys. They suffocated the Redskins all day. All right? They got 4 turnovers, including 2 picks by Janoris Jenkins, who got torched by Mike Evans last week. He really needed that. Again, no parades, listeners. No parades for doing this against the dreadful Redskins. Saying there'd be no parades for reaching 2-2. It may be easy to preach patience, Matt Mike. Harder to practice it. Okay? Harder to practice it. And this may well be the high watermark for the Giants this year. It's also a moment when you can say, this is a team that's better this week than it was last. And a week before, and a week before that.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? So, with that being said, again, we got to see what this young man has made over the next 2 weeks. He played exceptionally well the game against the Tampa Bay Bucks, Matt Mike. He played well enough to win this Sunday. Okay, he didn't play exceptionally well. He played well enough to win this Sunday. And sometimes as an NFL quarterback, that's all you have to do. But again, I'm going to praise his poise in the pocket, Matt Mike. He didn't turn the ball over. I'm talking about not outside of interceptions. He didn't fumble the ball when he had a lot of traffic around him. And his mobility is so much. I mean, you know, as Giant fans, not used to seeing a mobile quarterback. I mean, when's the last time we had one? Jeff Hostetler? And that was years ago. There are so many plays that this young man extended yesterday, Matt Mike, that Eli Manning would never have done. Never. In a million years.
So now I'm going to ask you a question I think is fair. Is he good, or has Eli just been so bad?
I think Eli, and that's a great question, and here's my answer to that. Here's my response to that, man, Mike. I think Eli has been so bad over the last couple years that is making Daniel Jones look that much better. Why are you comparing him to Eli Manning? He's not Eli Manning. He's not. They just happen to be coached by the same by Cutcliffe. Cutcliffe, I'm sorry. But yep. We're so used to Eli Manning ducking and falling when pressure's around him. You don't have a quarterback that's ducking and falling. You have a quarterback that's actually running out of the pocket and making plays or extending plays with his feet. We haven't seen that for years. haven't seen that for years. Mm-hmm. That siren in the background, listeners, is the cops going to arrest Eli Manning.
No, listeners. Truth is, I'm over here by St. John's, and they're probably looking APB out on the St. John's basketball team because you know they stink.
Listen, man. Let's just move on to these grades, man, Mike. Okay, and let's start off with the offense. All right, raise your hand if you picked up and activated Wayne Gallman for your fantasy football team. Yeah, I bet.
I played somebody who had Wayne Gallman.
Really?
I did. The guy I played started him.
Wow.
So.
I mean, Phil.
Listeners, just full disclosure, I started Jordan Howard, and he ended up with, I believe, 32 points. So yeah. Worked out in my
Listen, filling in for Saquon Barkley, man, Mike. Gallman had 18 carries for 63 yards and 6 catches for 55 yards, scored 2 touchdowns. He did lose a fumble. All right, Daniel Jones, 23-31 for 225 yards, touchdown, 2 interceptions. He looked like a rookie. Okay, that's the learning curve. Boy, that means the St. John's basketball team must be running all over the damn place, man. You know what I'm saying? But he kept his cool, and his 16-yard scramble was a thing of beauty. No sacks, but not the cleanest, you know what I'm saying, pocket up front. All right, 2 holding penalties on Mike Remmers, one on Remmers, one on Kevin Zeitler, and too many hits on Jones. 4 turnovers won't cut it in most games. All right, Matt Mike, I'm going to give this offense, okay, a B.
B's fair. I had him at a B minus because, honestly, I do think the turnovers worry you. And if they were playing the team with any semblance of a coach that knows what he's doing, that I don't want to say a better quarterback situation because I do believe Dwayne Haskins is going to be a good quarterback. I just think that, you know, when you throw a guy in there with no real weapons, no running backs to mention, a porous offensive line, it's just falling apart over there. And I would be concerned with turnovers. I do like Daniel Jones' ability to manipulate the pocket at times, but it's strange. It is a lot. Once again, I'm going to say it again and again and again and again. His quarterback completion percentage, it doesn't necessarily, it's not, I'm not impressed by it. I know everybody else is like, well, hey, you know, he's 60, 70%. Well, the thing about the Giants offense is it's predicated on a lot of underneath throws. It's predicated on a lot of short routes. Yeah. Your completion percentage.
15 maybe, yeah. Stretching it.
Which is why, yeah, if you think about it, and I'm going off on a tangent real quick, but, you know, that's why you sign Golden Tate and extend Sterling Shepard and why you focus on running backs that can catch because you're not looking to stretch the field. You're looking to do exactly that. So that's another reason why I'm kind of like, well, you know, his completion percentage is always going to be that. He's not an attack. They don't attack. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
if you say, hey, go get me a score and
no
score plays, they're not going to do it.
Passes were completed in yesterday's game.
No.
No, none whatsoever. So let's move on to this defense. I'm sorry, again, Matt Mike, what was you going to say?
No, I was going to say, which is why I didn't give him an A, which is why I gave
and
him.
I would have gave him a C+, Matt Mike, but I gave him a B because they put up 24 points and they won. So that's what changed.
Well, they only put up 17. They had a pick 6.
Right.
They only put up 17.
Right. And now speaking of Jabril Peppers, let's grade the defense. And there was a splash play that the Giants were waiting out of the safety Jabril Peppers. He made a good play on that interception and ran it back 32 yards for a touchdown. Unfortunately, you know, Ryan Conley, who had an interception, they're fearing he may have tore his ACL. Janoris Jenkins had a decent game, you know, after having a terrible performance in Tampa. He had 2 interceptions. And, you know, this was domination against a shabby opponent, bottom line. All right? 4 interceptions, 55 total rushing yards allowed. They had 3 sacks, and they only gave up 3 points. When do they play the Redskins next? Matter of fact, can we play the Redskins, what is it, 12 more times or 13 more times? Yeah, 12 more times because it's 16 games. Can we play them 12 more times? All right, I'm gonna give the defense an A, Mad Mike. I know it's against the Redskins, listeners, and some people may be like, are you out of your damn mind? But I'm gonna give them an A. They only gave up 3 points, and they got some turnovers and some sacks, so I'm giving them an A.
Yeah, I give them an A, too, because you can only play who they put in front of you. But if we're being honest, Lloyd, who's the number one receiver in Washington?
Their number one receiver was actually hurt. So with him being hurt, I couldn't even tell you who the hell Vernon Davis?
Who's their number two receiver?
Was
their number three? Outside of Terry, Scary Terry, from Ohio State, a rookie. I don't know who that Paul, whatever.
I don't even know, man.
That's exactly my point. It's easy for overrated guys like Jabril Peppers to look good. It's easy for Janoris Jenkins to bounce back after being exposed and torched. Real superstar receiver
coming up. You know what I'm saying? You guys, listen, it's about to get real. You know what I'm saying? Reality might slap Giant fans in the face. You go from 2-2, you know what I'm saying, to 2-4 real quick.
Yeah, you're talking about real receivers, real running backs, but you're also talking about they got another choke artist quarterback. But yes, and that's the key. Real defenses.
Listen, I'm not naive. I'm a big Giants fan, but I'm also a realist, listeners.
So
let's move on to special teams, man. Mike, is TJ Jones muffed his first punt return, forcing the offense to start on the 6-yard line. Jones then on another punt went to go for a fair catch and muffed that. To recover it again. Not good. All right? Not good. And he was replaced by Peppers. And he also did get another chance. Excellent coverage by Antonio Hamilton. He can't cover a receiver. But he did good on special teams on a 57-yard punt by Riley Dixon. All right? It was another strong showing by Dixon. He had a 55-yard punt out of bounds on the 5-yard line, and Aldrick Rojas hit his only field goal try from 30 yards, man. Mike, I'm going to give the special teams a B+, and I would have given them an A if it wasn't for those two muff punts by TJ Jones.
Yeah, once again, I gave them a B-. I didn't think they did anything spectacular today. They didn't lose any points in the kicking game, which is why it's boosted up. But once again, when you're playing better teams, better defenses, when we're talking about giving other teams opportunities, pushing the offense back to starting point at the 6-yard line. Let's be honest. You want to talk about your rookie quarterback starting, you know, under pressure at the 6 against a defense like the Minnesota Vikings. You got to be better than that. So I don't want to ignore the fact that TJ Jones and you know, his suspect play in special teams. But Jabril Peppers is an explosive special teamer since his college days. So maybe they'll find another way to use him outside of defense.
All right, now let's move on to coaching. It's going to be interesting to see would you give the coaching staff for a grade. I actually thought that Pat Shurmur did a good job. Hear me out before you get up in arms, listeners. I thought he did a good job in using 2 timeouts on defense late in the second quarter to save time for the offense to get a last-second field goal before halftime. See, so thank you for hearing me out, listeners. And I thought he continued his aggressive ways with Daniel Jones, Mad Mike. He actually went for it on a 4th down. All right? Some tweaks on defense, again, against a bad team. And I'm not going to give James – I got to give the defense some credit, but they still played a bad team, man, Mike. That's the bottom line, listeners. They played a bad football team. Bad. If they would have played against a better team, I would have given them an A for a grade, man, Mike. But because they played against the Washington Redskins, I'm gonna give the coaching a B.
I gave the coaching an incomplete only because, like I said before, I just think that the coaching staff of the Washington Redskins is so inept that it's hard to know what adjustments he did make. Yes, he called the two timeouts that saved allowed them to kick a field goal at the end of half. But you know how much of those two timeouts were available to him because of bad play calling by the Washington Redskins at the end of the half. So it's like I gave them an incomplete only because I just think that we'll see more next week. I just don't think that you know. I mean, James Betcher, if you can't dial up against that offense you saw today, then you don't belong as a DC in this league to begin with. So as far as I'm concerned, once again, they were never faced with any they were never forced at any point in the game to have to adjust. So I just gave it an incomplete. A B would be fair because, like I said, I guess you can only play the people in your, in front of you. But I don't know, man. I don't know what this coaching staff did.
All right. So now let's talk a little bit of baseball, man, Mike. And before we get on, before we move on to more important baseball after the break, let's talk about the New York Metropolitans before the break. All right. As Mickey Callaway awaits his fate after Dominic Smith's walk-off home run in the Mets season final against the Atlanta Braves yesterday. And in baseball, sure sign, man, Mike, that a season is ending is the sudden appearance of large cardboard boxes in which players stuff their professional lives. All right, the apparel that they've acquired the past 8 months, the equipment they'll need over the winter or in spring training, maybe the ballpark giveaways, they mostly don't care about. All right, these boxes first appeared in the Mets clubhouse on Wednesday afternoon, hours before the team was mathematically eliminated from the playoffs contention and proliferated over the weekend as they played out the string before a 7-6 win in 11 innings against the Braves in the season final. All right, now. Okay, Dominic Smith in his first at-bat in more than 2 months after sitting out with a stress fracture in his left foot, hit a walk-off 3-run homer when the Mets were down in the final out. Meaningless for the Atlanta Braves. I would really want to congratulate Pete Alonso on eclipsing Aaron Judge's home run, but I can't do it, man, Mike. I can't bring myself to do it. I can't bring myself to do it. So what I want to ask you, Mad Mike, okay, is do you think Mickey Callaway did enough to save his job? And what's your thoughts on Pete Alonso eclipsing Aaron Judge's home run record? Because I had a feeling he was going to do it. I had a feeling. I just felt that the stars were aligned for him to do it. This year, Mad Mike, there's been a bunch of bull turd with home runs. The Yankees broke the home run record last year, Mad Mike. What was it, 267?
276.
And Minnesota had over 300 home runs
this year. Or 267, you're right, I believe.
Both had over 300 home runs as a team. That's 600-plus home runs from just two teams. And they broke the record last year, 267. Pete Alonso on his back, man, Mike? There's something going on with these damn baseballs, man. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Your thoughts on Callaway? Should he keep his job? And your thoughts on Pete Alonso?
We all know the Mets stunk.
I'm sorry. We all know they stunk. All right? They played well down the stretch, and they may have something to look forward to going into next year.
No, as far as Mickey Callaway is concerned, I think that they should move on. My personal opinion, I do. I think that he's a terrible in-game manager. Whether you want to acknowledge that in-game managers are not as important anymore because of the analytics. The Mets, you know, everyone is on record. The Mets don't have a very good analytics staff. They don't have, a very good analytics department. They're behind on the curve when it comes to analyzing stats and making decisions, regardless of what they want you to believe. That's just it. If you're not a stat driven, if you're not investing in stats, then you need a strong in-game manager. You need a guy like Joe Maddon. You might even need a guy like, say, a Joe Girardi, who relies on stats but wants to rely on it at his own pace, not at the pace of the front office, which is why it fell apart with him and the Yankees. Joe Maddon on one hand, Joe Maddon, would be a great fit for a young, up-and-coming roster. I don't think he's a good fit for veterans, which is why I think it fell apart so quickly in Chicago for him. He's too loose. But, you know, Girardi might, I don't know how many guys would like Girardi in his overbearing ways if you're a veteran or if you want him around your youngins like the Yankees didn't. Anyway, I digress. I don't think Callaway will keep his job. I think that they'll look for some bigger names. Like I said,
I heard Buck Showalter's name also thrown around there.
Buck is a good fit for them too. He's good with young kids. He understands the game. He knows how to use the analytics to his advantage. But as far as the home runs go, man, I know some of our fans said he needs to stop bitching and moaning. The home runs really bother me, man. The home runs, you know, they really, really, really irk me. It's crazy to me. And when you think about the fact that last year the New York Yankees broke the home run record with 267 home runs, think about the fact that this year four teams would have beat it. Four teams. If you want to take into account, two other teams were only 9 home runs or worse or less away from that mark. You literally could have had 6 teams, 6 of them, beat the home run record, break the home run record for last year. It makes me sick to my stomach. The fact that, you know, Pete Alonso broke the record, it makes me sick to my stomach because say whatever you want. Yeah, he didn't. So players are not juicing anymore. So baseball is juicing the balls. So Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, they're juicing the balls. They can't juice the players. They gotta appear to have a clean game. So let's juice the baseballs. It upsets me that he breaks the home run record by 1, in a year where where the home run ball became a joke because Aaron Judge broke this record 3 years ago. The ball wasn't flying off. Those were 52 legitimate home runs. You understand? Like, that meant something 3 years ago. This year, he goes into the records, and this is what I was telling you last week. This is why I wanted the Yankees to beat the Twins out. Because now the Twins, regardless if the record means anything to you or not, the Twins now have they're the team, 307. They broke the New York Yankees record. Even if the Yankees broke the New York Yankees record and the Los Angeles Dodgers broke the Los Angeles Dodgers record. You understand? It's the Twins' record. It's not the Yankees record. That's one for me. It bothered me so much. You had Tim Anderson, who is totally, you know, every chance he's gotten, he's talked bad about baseball. He's a batting title. He won the batting title, right? He has more home runs this year than he had combined his whole career. Think about that. Think about that.
Yeah.
You can't make this up.
Yeah.
You can't. I don't know, man. I don't know.
We'll see what happens with baseball next year. I mean, it's been something that's been discussed. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens next year. But like you said, you brought up a great stat. You know what I'm saying? That 4 teams, you know what I'm saying, would have broken the record that the Yankees set. Which is just absolutely mind-boggling to me, Mad Mike. It really is. It really is. And another great point, you can't juice no more. So instead of, you know, players getting busted for juicing, we'll just juice the baseball. So if they did a, if they ran drug testing on the baseballs would be in some serious trouble. That may have been corny, but that's just the reality of the situation.
No, you're right. Yeah, it's facts.
You know, so
that's facts.
So what happens? What happens next year? I mean, just astonishing, man. All these home runs hit was absolutely ridiculous, man. Ridiculous. And the Yankees are a solid baseball team, man. Mike, what they have? 10-plus guys with 20 home runs or something like that? With something crazy.
Yeah, but and that's the other reason. The Yankees are not exempt from this. We're fans of the Yankees, so obviously we're biased. But if we're being objective, the Yankees broke the record for most injuries in a season this year. Think about that. The Yankees just hit 306 home runs this year, and Giancarlo Stanton played in 20 games. Aaron Judge missed 54 games. Gary Sanchez missed over 50 games on the DL. That's their 3-4-5 hitters. They hit 307 home runs, and their starting shortstop didn't play until June. You understand? They hit 307 home runs, and their starting center fielder missed a combined 4 months out of the six. Well, and we're talking about Aaron Hicks.
Yeah.
They hit 307 home runs, and their starting second basemen combined for something like 230 missed games this year. Some nonsensical number like that from their first base position. Think about that. 307 home runs. 306 home runs. And they had all those injuries. They're not exempt from this. They actually probably proved the point more than the Twins. And another thing that bothers me, the Twins hit 307 home runs. Lord, how many starters do they have that have a batting average over 270?
Yeah, no, you're right. Absolutely, that's a great point. That's a great
point. Think about that. They only have three players that qualify for the batting title that hit over 270 in their entire roster. And they broke? Guys that can't hit the ball, they broke the record?
That's why. Listen, this playoff series is going to be a slugfest, which we're going to touch up on. But let's take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk Yankee playoff baseball, and we're going to talk a little bit of basketball as the Brooklyn Nets had their media day, and everybody is jumping on that bandwagon. So we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, it is time to talk Yankee playoff baseball as the Yankees have gained home field advantage against the Minnesota Twins. But should they beat the Twins and should the Houston Astros win their series against the wild card winner of the Tampa Bay Devil Rays the Oakland Athletics, Houston will have home field advantage throughout the playoffs, all right? Severino pitched against Texas, looked okay. Paxton had an issue. What was it, a nerve issue, Mad Mike, I believe?
Yeah, in his ass, brother. In his ass. Freaking walking infirmary, bro.
So, I don't know what the Yankees... I'm assuming they're going to start Paxton game one. Maybe they might start Tanaka, with Tanaka being the best playoff pitcher that the Yankees have on their roster. Maybe they start Tanaka. Who knows what's going on? What is going on with Edwin Encarnacion, man, Mike? Will he be back by Friday?
They like to say that he was going to be back. They didn't end his season, so I really, really, really don't know.
Okay.
Not sure just yet. He wasn't activated, so I guess it really is a who's who.
That's a little bit scary, because I tell you what, Luke Voit ain't hitting for nothing right now.
Yes. You know, we saw this last year, and this is the thing, man. This is the Luke Voit didn't hit last year in the playoffs either. He didn't hit in September. You know what I mean? Like, you can't ignore that anymore. The Yankees cannot. They can no longer ignore these talentless streaks. These, you know, oh, it's just, he'll figure it out. He's close. Save it, man. Save it. Save it. He didn't hit in October last year. And now we're to believe that he's going to hit. I have a big problem, man. I'll be honest with you. I'm extremely nervous. I'm extremely nervous about this playoff series.
I am too. You know what makes me nervous, man, Mike, is because we talked about how these guys just kind of disappear. You know, when it comes to hitting, it's the pitching staff. Now you talk about, because the Yankees did so well during the regular season, Mad Mike, I feel it has covered up general manager Brian Cashman's ineptitude to get what the Yankees needed to essentially, you know, propel them to winning the World Series. I still don't think that this team has strong enough pitching to deal with the likes of Houston. I don't even think they have strong enough pitching to deal with the likes of Tampa Bay, Mad Mike, or Oakland.
Yeah, I don't want that. If you think about it, right? If you step back and think about it, think about how they look. And I'm not going to say how they did. Think about how vulnerable they've looked against Tampa Bay. Think about how vulnerable they've looked against Oakland, Minnesota, and Houston this year. Think about that for a second. So you have Tampa Bay, Oakland, Minnesota, who bombs against them. You have Tampa, who's been shutting down fairly well with the pitching. And once again, they've also had some pretty big late game heroics against the Yankees. So that always breeds a little bit of confidence. And we saw what Oakland has done to them. And Houston, who wants to go against that pitching staff? Even though Zach Greinke didn't pitch against them for Houston, we saw what Zach Greinke did to them when he was in the Arizona Diamondbacks this year. We played the Diamondbacks four times. You saw what Greinke looked like. So, no, I am. I do think this calls for concern. I do. Not to mention the injury to Dellin Betances. We can say whatever we want, but Saturday night, Severino kind of came back down to earth. Is that just, you know, is he having, you know, guys start off strong in spring training, and then you see most pitchers, they kind of have a lull in that, those, you know.
It's crazy, because I was thinking the same exact thing, Mad Mike.
Yeah, it's so
hard. The first inning, I was like, okay, yeah, this is not the same pitcher we've seen the last two starts.
Yeah, but we see that all the time in spring training, do we not? Where a guy looks really good for the first couple starts, and then as he kind of starts to you know, go from being super fresh to as he starts to kind of a little bit of wear and tear, I guess is what I'll say. It's three starts is not a lot of wear and tear, but you know, he starts to come back to the pack a little bit and he's got to keep building himself up. That's what worries me with him. Tommy Canley has been struggling. Tommy Canley, has added, 1.25 to his ERA over the last 6 weeks. That's got to be cause for concern. We're talking about a guy had a sub two in August all of a sudden and is now up. I think he finished the year at 3.37. That should worry you. Adam Ottavino has had his struggles of recent weeks. He says that he's fixed it, but he's had his struggles. I'd be worried. I would be worried. They were relying on Dellin Betances, and the question is, did Dellin Betances do too much? Was he fully healed in the lat, or was he relying and putting a lot more pressure on his bottom half? There's a lot of concern, man. There's a lot of concern for a 102 win team.
And usually, as a Yankee fan, we walk around with our chests poked out. And you're hearing it from two of the biggest Yankee fans that you'll probably come across, listeners. And me and Mad Mike are as nervous as a 400-pound person walking on some eggshells over a bridge that has spiked, electrocuted needles.
Yeah, it's a problem.
I can really, listen, if the Yankees get knocked out by Minnesota in the first round, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be.
I do want to say this real quick. Sorry to cut you off. If they get knocked out in the first round, save your Boone needs to go crap for somebody who cares. If they get knocked out in the first round, this is not on Boone.
Oh,
this
yeah,
is on
I
Brian
agree.
Cashman. You understand?
I agree.
This is
you know
everything.
I'm not a big fan of, you know, I've been, you know, I wasn't a big component of Boone being hired. And I still have my issues with him, but I agree with you 10,000,000%. This is not on Aaron Boone. I think he's done an excellent job, and he definitely deserves to win the Manager of the Year award. Period. Period.
Yeah, this is not on him. This is not on the job he's doing. If they lose, if the bats go cold, all of this is strictly on Brian Cashman. This is on Brian Cashman. You understand? Brian Cashman, who refused to trade Miguel Andujar or Clint Frazier for Garrett Cole. You know, Garrett Cole, who has a sub-3 ERA and over 300 strikeouts this year. Garrett Cole, who the Yankees are probably going to give $200 million to in this offseason. That guy. This is his inability to go out and get other reliable starting pitchers during the year or in last year's offseason. This is on Brian Cashman, because here's something that me and you have not discussed. How about the fact that Lance Lynn would have the only guy that has would have as many wins as Lance Lynn on this year's team as Domingo Germán, who's not even on the roster anymore. Think about that. He chose J-Hap. So you traded for Lance Lynn last year after Lance Lynn didn't sign with the team until mid-year, and he clearly wasn't himself. And then you went and Lance Lynn is making half of what J-A-Hap. You know what I mean? He's making half of what they gave Hap. Hap is going to pitch out of your bullpen. Hap doesn't even deserve to pitch out of your bullpen. The only reason he's going to be there is because they can't afford to blow the pen early on in a game if someone else struggles. He's there to be the long man and innings eater, but he'll never be used in a high leverage situation. It's just not going to happen. He never found it. It doesn't matter. They were hoping he did. I don't know, Lloyd. I don't know. I can go on forever, ever, and ever and tell you why I'm nervous. I can tell you that James Paxton and his injury history all of a sudden pops up. You know, this reminds me of last year with Aaron Hicks. Aaron Hicks is always hurt. He's always hurt, right? And then was it last year or was it 2 years ago? He just gets hurt in October. It was last year, as a matter of fact. And you're like, you know what? We know that he's always hurt. James Paxton, we know he's always hurt. So are we shocked that he had to get pulled from his last start of the season because he had a strain?
What was it, a 7-year, $10 million deal?
Aaron Hicks, yeah, he got a 7-year deal. 7 years, 70 mil, whatever it is.
And he's facing Tommy John. He's on an injured list.
But here's what I'll tell you. He got hurt in August, Aaron Hicks. And this is what bothers me with the Yankees. If he wasn't going to play another game this year for us, why didn't he have Tommy John surgery in August, where he have a real shot at coming back next year, May or so? You understand? Last year, Didi got hurt in the playoffs in October. He was back by June with Tommy John. If you're them, I'd actually argue with you that if Aaron Hicks had the surgery in August, then he'd be ready for next year, April, maybe May. It doesn't make sense to me. He never played. He never played another game. Surgery.
At this point, do you blame that on the on the Yankees medical staff?
I blame that on. Listen, let's be honest. It's not like the Yankees have had this unbelievable, successful, healthy. They've mismanaged a lot of injuries over the last few years. And that's why I say, you know, if we're being objective and not biased, Brian Cashman hasn't exactly done a great job. He has mismanaged a lot of injuries. He's mismanaged a lot of situations recently. I mean, they told us that Giancarlo Stanton was going to miss just a few weeks when he got hurt in July. Remember that?
Yeah.
The knee?
Yeah.
He missed 2 months.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mean to laugh, but I'm just saying, like, you know, it's funny because you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Did he even play 20 games this year?
I know he played 9 games when he just came back, 2 weeks ago. I don't know how many games he's played.
Listen, let me tell you something.
But no, he might not have hit 20 games this year.
If I'm a pitcher and I got to face Giancarlo Stanton, I am throwing him sliders after sliders after sliders. He can't hit a slider, Mad Mike. He'll hit a slider if you make a mistake and hang one over the plate, middle in. But if you if your slider breaks away from him, I don't know how in the hell he has not altered his batting stance. He can't hit an outside pitch.
I don't disagree with you.
Unbelievable. But yes, this team makes me nervous. Very nervous, and they make me nervous, listeners, because they're going up against a team that hit 307 home runs, and they got to play possibly four games in a ballpark that is 313 down one line and 318 down the other, if I'm correct. Am I correct on that, Mad Mike?
You're correct. I've been all negative. I'm going to give you one reason for positivity, one real big reason for positivity. If you can't take out Cleveland, but the AL Central is one of the worst divisions ever. Ever. Think about it. If you have to play the Detroit Tigers, the Chicago White Sox, and the Kansas City Royals, who are all rebuilding. See, you got to think about this. The Yankees, yeah, you have Baltimore and you have Toronto. But at the same time, you're talking about the Boston Red Sox won 85 games. The Tampa Bay Devil Rays won, 97 games? And the New York Yankees won 102, 103 games? So think about that for a second. If how good is Minnesota? They should have 300 home runs when they're playing. I mean, the Tigers didn't even win 50, and I think the Royals won 52 games. There's two teams in that division with 100 losses. Think about that. So if you do want a reason to be excited about the playoffs or something to be optimistic about, I guess we could ask that question.
You know, man, how
good is Minnesota?
Let me paint this picture for you, and this is probably why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling when it comes to this. I don't know if you remember that game. I don't know why this game is sticking out in my mind. It was a game that the Yankees played in Minnesota, and it was a game where Aaron Hicks made that diving catch to end the game.
Yep.
Dude, Minnesota was smacking damn home runs left and right. I was like, yeah. Jesus.
But you got to remember at that time, the Yankees were really, really down. Remember, I believe CeCe got pulled from a game early, injured. Tanaka got lit up. It was a point where, you know, they were going to openers and they were pitching the likes of Luis Sessa. It was just some bad. There was some bad guys pitching. There really was. That was at a point. You're saying now with Severino back, you're saying hopefully Paxton, who has pitched lights out in the final six
yeah,
weeks.
He has.
You're hoping that he's, you know, it's nothing to worry about. He just couldn't get loose. You know, maybe he was squatting too much weight and just the body didn't recover in the weight room. Who knows? I'm just speculating, but I agree with you. I just think that from a Yankee, a team front office perspective, I just think they feel that they're a lot more healthier right now in the pen. Like I said, they're going to move guys to the pen. CeCe's going to pitch out of the pen, to my understanding. I heard Susan Wallman and Sterling talking about it. Maybe, you know, that whatever starter is not going to pitch in this series, they're going to the pen. So, you know, maybe they just feel that they're better equipped right now. They're just going to have a much deeper pitching staff than they did mid-year.
All right, so let me ask you this, man, Mike, before we move on to the Brooklyn Nets. If the Yankees start, if their positional players, right, if their positional players is healthy, okay, you don't have to give me your batting order. Who would you have playing positions in the field, and who would you have as your DH? So you could start from catcher and go from catcher around the horn and finish in the outfield, and then I'll do mine before we move on to the Nets.
Obviously, it's got to be Gary. Gary's got to catch. You don't give away that kind of offensive production at the catch position. At first base, this is going to be unfair, but we don't know if he's healthy. I'm going to go Luke Voit at first base. I'm lying to you. I'm going to start DJ LeMahieu at first base. I'm going to start Glaber at second base. I'm going Didi at short. I'm going Gio Urshela at third base. I'm moving to the outfield, and I'm putting are we going to operate as if Encarnacion will be activated?
Yes.
Then I'm going to go with Stanton in left field, Brett Gardner in center. I'm going to go with Aaron Judge in right field, and I'm going to go with Encarnacion as my DH.
Yeah, you, and
my
you know
game
what?
One.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was going to say my game one starter would be, because of how well he's pitched and because it's Yankee Stadium and I need the lefty on the mound, I'd go James Paxton.
Okay, now, here's, you know what? Mine's is it's just as identical as yours. So I would go Sanchez catching, but I would go Edwin Encarnacion at first, man, Mike, only because I think he's a better, I think he's the best, ironically, I think he's the best defensive first baseman that the Yankees have on their roster. And that's sad to say. I'm not a big fan of Luke Voit defensively at first base. And obviously, DJ LeMahieu, he's athletic enough to play first base, but he's not a first baseman. Okay? But with his injury, that would I would pencil LeMahieu in at first. So I have LeMahieu in at first, Gleyber second, like you said, around the horn, Didi is short, Gio at third, Stanton in left, you know, Gardner in center, and Aaron Judge in right. With Edwin Encarnacion DH-ing. And not for nothing. I mean, we talk about the pitching, Mad Mike, but if you look at the Yankees lineup 1-9, they have this. They even have a scarier lineup than the Houston Astros 1-9.
Yes.
Because you're talking about your number nine hitter, which might be Brett Gardner or maybe Didi Gregorius. You know what I'm saying? Brett Gardner almost hit 30 home runs this year.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So I will say that the Yankees have the scariest lineup of any playoff team. But I also feel that they probably have the worst pitching starting pitchers than any playoff team. I don't know about Minnesota. You know, Minnesota might be a push. But I'm nervous about everybody else, man, Mike. I really am. Nervous about everybody else. But we'll see. Obviously, we're going to have a lot to talk about. You know what I'm saying? Usually, if the Yankees get knocked out, we're like, whatever, middle finger to baseball. But we may still talk about it just for your sake, listeners. You know, hockey is starting, man, Mike. Islanders, Rangers. Are you excited about your Rangers?
I am. They actually just were rated the number one farm system in hockey.
Yeah, I watched the game where the Islanders played the Rangers at the Garden, and I'm impressed by the Rangers. I'm also, you know, I'm really impressed by the Islanders too, man, Mike. I thought this team would take a step back, and obviously it's preseason, so you really don't know, you know, but you know, Barry has them playing solid hockey. I still think they need to get better on the power play, and I still think they need a top-flight goal scorer. They don't have that. And that doesn't equal Stanley Cup in my opinion. It just doesn't. That's not the recipe to win you a Stanley Cup. But I do expect the Rangers to be a lot better this year than they were last year. Some big additions, free agent additions, Capo Caco or Caco Capo. How the hell do you pronounce his name?
Capo Caco.
Caco Caco. Sound like something that grows on your feet.
I mean, laugh now. He's going to be the best player in all of New York.
Listen,
in all of the tri-state.
So, you know, listeners, I mean, we normally don't talk about hockey, but we're going to start talking about hockey a lot more. All right? We promise you on that. But before we close out the show, man, Mike, let's talk about the Brooklyn Nets' media day. Okay? His coming gone for, you know, and obviously they took the spotlight. You didn't hear much about the Knicks media day. You know, all you heard everything about was Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. All right, but before we go into Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, all right, the Brooklyn Nets have signed Lance Thomas, a former New York Knick. Now, there was reports that the Nets were interested in Carmelo Anthony. And Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving was pushing the Nets to sign Carmelo Anthony. But the Nets have decided to sign Lance Thomas. Now, what is that saying about Carmelo Anthony, man, Mike, if that's the case?
One, they don't think he's good for team chemistry. Two, I there was a report earlier that said in the week that also said that Carmelo Anthony did not want to play with Brooklyn. He did not want to sign with Brooklyn. As much as they were pushing for Brooklyn to sign him. Now, this could be him saving face. This could be him saying, you know, getting word out that Brooklyn was going to move in a different direction. So he's, you know what I mean? In the end of the day, he's over here trying to, you know, save face. Another team moving on from him, not giving him a shot. I mean, really, how far are you falling when a team prefers Lance Thomas over you?
But, right, man, that might be it. You know, I think we may have seen the last of Carmelo Anthony in NBA. You know, Knicks great Clyde Frazier seems to think that a team is going to sign him, Mad Mike, but I don't know, man.
What team? Our team? Or no,
yeah, just the team in general. Oh. That, you know, Clyde Frazier seems to think that he'll be on the NBA roster this season. I don't
Listen,
know.
If he's not playing with LeBron James in L.A., if he couldn't make it work in Houston with Chris Paul, if the Houston, I mean, if the Miami Heat didn't take a chance on him at some point last year, you know, and you know, Wade swan song, trying to give Wade everything that he could use, all the weapons he could use for another playoff run, he's done. He's done.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame because you know what? I've always been a big Carmelo fan.
He ruined everything with the way he handled the exit. You know, and the reason I say that is, you know, everyone wants to say New York failed. We failed him. We failed him. The organization failed him. No. Phil Jackson failed him. And I don't even think Phil Jackson failed him. I think Phil Jackson didn't say anything. Phil Jackson didn't say anything Chauncey Billups didn't say. Remember that. You know, Chauncey Billups didn't get any flack from anybody. He said the same things Phil Jackson said. He implored him to change his game. He explained to him one day that you know, your abilities are going to go. You need to change your game if you want to stay in the NBA. If you're good at doing just one thing, when that one thing leaves you, nobody has a need for you. It's that simple. And don't, you know what? I'm tired of the hoodie mellow, the workout tapes. Look at this. He's playing nobodies. He's playing pickup ball at Lifetime Fitness. I don't want to hear anything about that.
And you know, Matt, Mike, you know, we was talking about, you know, as I brought up the fact, and you are right about that, this dude is playing against nobodies. But I was pointing out the fact that maybe the Knicks should ring the bell, and, you know, I think, you know, but you brought up a good point as to why. Just explain to the listeners as to why you feel it would be a bad idea for the Knicks to entertain the thought of signing Carmelo Anthony.
I just think it would be a bad idea because of where the Knicks are right now. The Knicks are trying to cultivate a new culture. They're trying to cultivate they're trying to bring guys like Kevin Knox along. They're trying to bring humble guys like Frank Ntilikina along. You know what I mean? You have RJ Barrett now in the fold. And you got to remember something. Not long ago, they had players in here with him. He was a bad influence on some players. Let's not forget, he's the one that showed, that mentored KP, who became entitled, KP, who never once looked at Melo's faults, only looked at the organization's faults, and this is how they treat their stars. You understand? He put that in KP's head. Why would you want him anywhere around these other young kids?
No, you're right. Why? And like I said, this could be the end of Carmelo Anthony. Maybe he needs to take his talents overseas to Europe, man, Mike.
Yeah, and, you know, not for nothing, I heard J.R. Smith talking about it again, Triangle and all these guys. You know what's the funny part about all these guys? You don't think the Triangle would have benefited guys like them? With all their ability is in the league is to score. It's never been to play within a system. They're ball hogs. Don't you think the Triangle would work for them? It's a three-man spacing where the open guy takes the shot. Think about that. That's all the Triangle ever is. It's just a three-man spacing at any point on the court, whether you're playing. That's all it is. It's freaking, it's geometry, bro. It would have saved all of them. They're just so ignorant. They just wanted you to believe this is an antiquated system. And at the end of the day, the Triangle works for Steve Kerr. He has better shooters, and so people want to, you know, when they make it look fun. But in the end of the day, the main principle is still the Triangle. They play it in San Antonio. You don't hear one complaint.
No, you're right. And like you said, every place he's going, he's worn out his welcome. He has.
I'm just saying, when you think about where he's at, where you think about J.R. Smith is at right now in his career, you know, you don't think they wish they had the coaching. You don't think they wish they had a system, offensive system, that they can flourish in at this moment. sometimes when you lose your skills, you know what? How you survive? Systems.
No, you're right. But, you know, we kind of got sidetracked a little bit with this whole Melo thing.
Sorry.
You know, no, that's me too, because I started talking about Melo. But one day into the Nets training camp, you know, there seems to be a palpable change from last year. You know, from the 200 press members that showed up at media day to the fans stalked outside the training center. Stars Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving have thought, you know, they brought a whole new vibe to Brooklyn. So many people are jumping on the bandwagon of this team. And Durant remains out with a ruptured Achilles tendon. Okay, and Irving sat out the first day with the facial fracture sustained Tuesday from an inadvertent elbow. There it goes with him. He's already starting up. And then Irving came out and said that I was a bad leader in Boston. You just signed somebody who's saying they were a bad leader in Boston to a max contract.
You know what? I lost a lot of respect for him. But when you hear guys say that they knew in February that these guys had already decided that they were going to play together in Brooklyn, when you hear those stories now, when you hear it from NBA ballplayers, it's funny. I'm not going to talk about it because that's actually going to be my rant. So keep going. I'm sorry. That was actually my rant. So I'm not going to give my rant right now. I'm going to save it.
Yeah, no. So I was saying, you know, is that something that you want to hear from a team leader? Because if he does that there, who's to say that he's not going to do it where he's at now? You know, he tried to say that a lot of it had to deal with the passing of his grandfather, you know, which death is never an easy thing to deal with.
You want to know what?
But it also seems like it's an excuse, Matt, Mike, because he was awful. He was an awful leader in Boston. He was like that kid who you took the ball away from him and he sat in the corner with his thumb in his mouth. But he didn't get his way.
He's been that guy. Because, you know, let's be honest. If we sat back and think about it, he didn't spend 1 year in Boston. He spent two. We're talking about a guy who, he's always hurt. A guy whose season ended early. And I never really thought about it until recently. His first season in Boston ended early. And remember, he decided that he wasn't going to go to Game 7 so he could of the Eastern Conference Finals so he can have surgery. That was all about him. That was a selfish player. Two things there. He didn't want to see, if they lost, he didn't want to see LeBron James celebrating on his court after he made the decision to leave Cleveland. And two, he wasn't going to be there if they did win. And showed everybody in the world we didn't need this guy. He wasn't going to be there for that. He at that point in time, we should have seen how selfish a guy he was. And I can't wait. This is not going to work. This is not going to work. I'm 110% convinced it's not going to work.
Woo! Boy, am I going to be happy when they fall flat on their damn face. Hopefully that's the case. Woo! Woo! We're going to have a lot of that to talk about, listeners, but again, as always, we get to the part of the show that I know and love, and I know you guys love it, where we let Mad Mike go off on his rant. We call him Mad Mike for a reason. So let's see what is irritating Mad Mike for this week. Mad Mike, what is your rant for the week, brother?
It was Kyrie Irving. It was that interview where he talked about being a leader, talked about his grandfather dying, all this bogus talk, all this nonsense that this media ate up. By the way, it's the same media that when they thought he was coming to the New York Knicks, kept saying, this kid is too temperamental, it's never going to work, he can't handle the New York media. All of a sudden, the Brooklyn Nets don't play in New York. That's number one. So now all of a sudden, everything that he says, we're going to take it as gold. He knows what he's talking about. The earth is flat. Unbelievable to me. But the reason that he pissed me off when he talks about being a leader in Boston, you knew you were leaving the whole time, dude. You knew you were leaving the whole time, and you sabotaged their season. You sabotaged their season. So why are you to me, he shouldn't even talk about his time in Boston. It should be a conversation ender. It shouldn't be a conversation starter. They shouldn't be writing anything about what he says about his time in Boston. He set those kids up, man. he ruined the chemistry on that team on purpose. He did it on purpose, and he took his ball and he ran to Brooklyn. And if we're to believe anything that we were told, he knew he was going to Brooklyn with KD in February. Boston and Brooklyn playing the same exact division. Yeah, it would make sense for him to cause all that strife in the locker room. Was it Terry Rozier saying, hey, it's either me or him? Was it not him? I know if some people come back, I'm leaving for sure. What's that tell you? When I hear him talk, man, I'm just like, shut up. And it's not because he's not a New York Knicks, because we know the truth now. We know what his plans were and what he did. And now we're going to write these stories, now that he's not a Knick, we're going to write these stories as if they never existed? Come on, man.
And it's going to be interesting to see what happens should this team struggle, man, Mike, without Kevin Durant. I mean, Kevin Durant is the best player on the team, and he's not going to be playing this year. So Kyrie Irving is going to be the best player on this team. So let's see what happens, you know, when the Nets go on a 5-game losing streak, should that happen. Let's see what his demeanor is.
The one thing we know is that Kenny Atkinson's system is going to allow him to shoot the ball 25 times. Like it allowed D'Angelo Russell to shoot the ball 25 times. The question is, can Kyrie Irving play as efficiently as, and remember something, they believe that D'Angelo Russell's season was a fluke. They believe that he's never going to be that kind of efficient ever again in his career, which is why they went with the older, more injury-prone Kyrie Irving. The question is, can Kyrie Irving have that same kind of out-of-body, super efficient kind of season? Because remember, go look at his efficiency numbers. They're not the best.
Yeah, I just think D'Angelo Russell fit the Nets system better than Kyrie Irving. I think them signing Kyrie, you know what I'm saying, was a mistake over D'Angelo Russell. I do.
I think D'Angelo Russell was the face of their rebuild. I think he was the face of everything they did right. A kid that they proved that they could develop. Now they're telling you that it was Caris LeVert the whole time. No, it wasn't. You know, D'Angelo Russell. We
talk about karma, man, Mike. I talk about it all the time, and I've been talking about it quite a bit. You know what I'm saying? This is going to be karma for the Nets. Watch what I tell you, because D'Angelo Russell is the biggest reason why that team had the successful season that they had last year. He's the biggest reason why. And when he didn't play well in the playoffs, what ended up happening? They ended up losing.
Yeah. But I'll tell you this. He's a guy that, if I'm the New York Knicks, he's a guy I'm thinking about, because he's a guy that we all know, once Klay Thompson is back, he's going to be available. He's going to be available, and the Knicks have some nice little pieces that I think would do Golden State. Bobby Porter, I think he would.
He will also fit in well with the Knicks. He's not one of those players that, you know what I'm saying, that's me. I think he would fit in really well to the, you know.
No, I just think that you're going to see it. I think that Golden State is, we all know they're going to move him. I just think he's a guy that the Knicks should keep their eye on, you know, later on, trade chip. You know, you could move some of these second round picks. We know Golden State has some great leverage, you know, great history drafting in the second round over the last few years. You move some of those Dallas picks, you move some of these expiring contracts, maybe an Elfrid Payton to give them a little bench stability to replace Sean Livingston, and you give them some big man depth. I can see the Knicks being a perfect trade candidate for D'Angelo Russell. So and then you're talking about, you know, you move forward with D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle and put these young kids around them. And if you can make a big enough turn, maybe you're interesting. You just got to be interested in one superstar. That's it, really.
Agreed. I agree with you. Well, you know, with that being said, listeners, that's going to bring us to a close of this week's show. We want to thank you for sticking with us and rocking out with us. We appreciate it, because without you guys, there's no us. And you guys is what keeps me and Mad Mike coming back and doing this show week in and week out, as we really enjoy, you know, bringing you this show. And we want to thank our producer, Ayo Omar Baker, for keeping this thing going as well. So listeners, please have a safe and blessed week. And me and Mad Mike will see you in 7 days. So Ayo, let's roll, baby.
And just like that, much like my cup of coffee, this show is over, finished, finito, done, we're out of here. Thank y'all for listening. If you subscribed, much appreciated. If not, please do so, because brand new episodes drop every single Monday, and I would hate to see you miss something. LloydAThompson.com, part of MyFresh.com. Subscribe, follow, @LloydAThompson on Instagram and Twitter. We're out of here. Peace.